Hi, this is Pastor and Bible teacher Warren Hoyt, welcoming you to another audio message of the Word of God, which, according to Acts 20:32, is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among God's people. John chapter 18, I'm going to bring you a message today about the life of Christ when Jesus was on trial, and I titled it, Into the Maelstrom. You remember the maelstrom, that's a storm. And so we're going to look at John 18 and a little bit of 19 today. Actually, this story is found in all four Gospels. And so I'll be kind of giving you a summary of what's in all four, and we'll just mostly read from John today. But last time we talked about the life of Christ, we looked at the Lord's agony in Gethsemane, the place of the olive press is what it means. And that's where, as you recall, he faced the greatest struggle of his whole life in ministry, where he actually questioned God and begged God that the cup would pass from him, but that wasn't to be. And we saw there how, you know, it's just so fascinating to consider what happens in gardens. Adam and Eve failed God in a garden, in paradise, the Garden of Eden. But the Lord Jesus, in another garden, the Garden of Gethsemane, won a total victory for himself and for all of us. And so he went through that olive press, which is what Gethsemane means. He went through that agony there, but then when he stepped out of those shadows into the flickering torchlight of that mob that came to arrest him, he was ready. And he'd settled things in his heart, and he was at peace. From that point on, he was going to be led into a hellish storm that we can't even really imagine. A demonic storm of evil. But he stepped into it willingly and knowingly. He knew everything that was going to happen. And he stepped into it as a person who was totally in control. And that's what I hope we'll see this morning. So let's look at John chapter 18. I want to kind of skim through different parts of the chapter here. Can't read all of this, but I want to start off with verse 2. So this is when he finished praying there in Gethsemane. Verse 2 says, "Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the grove, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, 'Who is it you want?' 'Jesus of Nazareth,' they replied. 'I am he,' Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, 'I am he,' they drew back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, 'Who is it you want?' And they said, 'Jesus of Nazareth.' 'I told you that I am he,' Jesus answered. 'If you're looking for me, then let these men go.' This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled, 'I have not lost one of those you gave me.' Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, 'Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?' Then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. They bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it would be good if one man died for the people." That's in John chapter 11 where he said that. Now let's drop down to verse 19, because the next part's about Peter's denial. We won't look at that today, but verse 19 through 24, "Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus." So he's brought in before first Annas and then Caiaphas, and the high priest questioned him about his disciples and his teaching. "I've spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in the face. "Is that the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. "If I said something wrong," Jesus replied, "testify as to what's wrong. But if I spoke the truth, Why did you strike me? Then Annas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Drop down now to verse 28. Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews didn't enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If it were not a criminal," they replied, "we wouldn't have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him by yourselves. Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You're right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. With this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. And the other Gospels tell us he actually had murdered somebody. Now let's go 19 verses 1 through 6. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." So we'll just read to there for now. And so, again, this is in all four Gospels, this story of the arrest and trial. Judas led the soldiers out there, and of course, the other Gospels say that he had arranged that he would kiss the one they were to arrest. And so, you know, he sold him out for 30 pieces of silver. He knew Jesus always went to the Garden of Gethsemane, so he led the mob out there, and he played into the hands of Satan and the Sanhedrin. And, you know, he gave him a kiss, but actually turned out that the kiss wasn't even necessary, because Jesus said, "Who are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "I am he." And so they all fell down. That's an amazing thing, you know. Often in the Old Testament, when the power of God would come upon into the temple or something like that, people would fall down. They couldn't stand in the presence of God. And so Jesus said, "I am," or "I am he." And they fell down. And it happened twice. So that kind of shows you that obviously if he'd have wanted to, he could have made them all just be plastered on the ground and unable to get up at all and arrest him. But he didn't. He allowed them to get back up. So then they led him to Annas' house, who's the father-in-law of the high priest and who was former high priest himself. And then they took him to Caiaphas. And when they got Jesus there, they had these different false witnesses that they'd arranged to speak lies about him. But they were idiots. They were very inept. And so they couldn't even tell the story right, you know? And must have been very frustrating to the Sanhedrin. You know, this is a kangaroo court. This whole thing was illegal. You're not supposed to meet at night. It was out of order. And then this is their one chance. They got him. By the way, they said earlier in the Gospels, it says that they said, "We can't possibly arrest him during the Passover time because there'll be a riot." So they didn't even think this was going to happen. They thought it'd be later. But Jesus decided when it was going to happen. God decided. They didn't. But they thought they weren't going to be able to arrest him at this time. And so it's not going that well. They got these dumb witnesses who can't get the story straight. And so finally, Matthew 26 tells us that the high priest was frustrated and he said, how long are you going to keep us in suspense? Are you the Christ, the Son of the living God, or not? And he just said straight out, I am, and you will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven. And so he actually helped them out at that point because their trial was not going well. But he helped them out and he told them directly that he was the Messiah so that they could condemn him. And so next they brought him to Pilate because they had already determined that he should be killed. They decided this a couple years back in his ministry. They were already determined that he should be killed, but they had no legal authority to kill, to execute, because, you know, they weren't in charge of their own country. The Romans were. So capital offenses had to be taken to Roman authorities. And that's why they went to Pilate. And they brought Jesus in to see Pilate early in the morning, and it was a Jewish holy day. And so, Matt, you know, they had this trial all night. And when we were in Israel in 2008, they take you to the place where they believe they had him chained. And if you watch The Passion of the Christ, that's the scene where he's chained above his head like this in a dark room. And in the movie, his mother is above ground, right at that place, not just kind of sensing that he's there or something, and she's weeping. But he's chained inside this room, and they turn the lights all out in there and let you see what it'd be like at night. So he is up all night that night and went through all kinds of hell there with all these different judgments and trials and so forth. And so then, you know, they bring him in to this judgment place, and it's a place where they can go. They don't want to go into a Roman court because that'll be unclean for them and they won't be able to celebrate Passover. So they're so religious. They're all about their religious traditions and they don't want to be ceremonially unclean even though they're in the process of condemning an innocent man. So Pilate must have been annoyed. He had to go out to meet with them. And, you know, these people, man, they're nuts. They got these religious things and they're killing this guy and I got to go out and meet him. It's early in the morning. Why do I have to do this? And so the Jews accused Jesus to Pilate and made it plain they wanted him executed. And if you read this carefully in all the Gospels, you see that Pilate really didn't want to go along and fulfill their wishes. He didn't want to have Jesus executed. You can just see that. He had some very interesting conversations with Jesus, and he said to him at one time, "You're not even going to answer me? Don't you know I have power to crucify you or to let you go?" And Jesus wouldn't answer him, which was just amazing to him. And another thing that I think is quite interesting is that his wife sent a message to him. "Don't have anything to do with that just man. I've suffered a lot in a dream this night because of him." And that's in Matthew 27. "Don't have time to deal with that today, but think about it." That's very, very remarkable that this woman had this dream that her husband shouldn't have anything to do with Jesus. Where'd that come from? Where'd that dream come from? God usually gives dreams, but did he give this? I don't think so. I don't know. Anyway, interesting thing. So Jesus is there in front of Pilate. He could have defended himself and helped Pilate out because Pilate didn't want to condemn him. Jesus could have just spoken up and said, "Yeah, I didn't do anything, and you know it, sir. I haven't done anything worthy of death, and these people are just, they hate me, and, you know, help me out here." He could have spoken up, but he didn't. And so that's why Pilate was so amazed, because life is nobody doesn't defend their life. I mean, there's like nobody who doesn't care if they die. You know, when it comes to life and death, everybody will do all they can to stay alive, and this guy's not. He won't say anything. But then he found out that Jesus was from Galilee, and Herod had jurisdiction in Galilee, so Pilate said, "Well, take him over there." Again, that's evidence to me. He wanted to get out of this. So he said, "I'll send him over there. That way I don't have to deal with this." He just knew something wasn't right about this. He didn't want to do it. But they take Jesus over to Herod. And of course, Herod is an interesting story. You know, he wanted to see a miracle. So he was glad when they brought Jesus before him. But Jesus didn't say a thing. And I think the reason he didn't say a thing is because Herod already had the greatest prophet who ever lived, just about, John the Baptist. speaking right directly to him, telling him he needed to repent and everything. And he had already felt convicted. Mark tells us that he liked to listen to John. He felt convicted. He thought he was a prophet. He knew he was a holy man. And he was kind of torn. On the one hand, he wanted to destroy him because he was a threat to his marriage and his life. And he rebuked him. But on the other hand, he knew he was a holy man. And so he wanted him to do a miracle in front of him. But Jesus doesn't do tricks for wicked people who are playing games and don't listen. No tricks. And so he didn't say a thing, and they just mocked him and then sent him back to Pilate. During this whole process somewhere, Judas saw what happened and was filled with remorse. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But he went back to the Sanhedrin and said, "Look, I've sinned. I've betrayed an innocent man." And they said, "What's that to us? That's your problem. Get out of here." And he takes the money and throws it into the temple. And he goes out and hangs himself. And committed suicide. Then Jesus gets back to Pilate. And by this time, the Jews have stirred up more agitation out in the crowd and everything. And so Pilate knows that with these Jewish people, this is not good. You know, because it's just like the situation today with the riots in the streets and all. You know, that's very unstable. And you got to watch what you do, because they'll just blow up. It's going to boil over. You want to pacify and get it out, get it over with, get these people out of here. You don't want to extend this thing. And so, but the Jews have agitated. They brought all these crowds there. So Pilate wants to release Jesus, but the Jewish leaders get the crowd to yell for his crucifixion. And so Pilate has this other idea. Maybe he can get off this way. It's their custom every year at this time of year to release one prisoner, whoever they want. So he says, "How about that? You know, I'll release a prisoner, whoever you want. You know, like we always do. You want this guy here, Jesus of Nazareth?" And I think Pilate was again seeking a way to get out of this responsibility to condemn the Lord. But the Jews didn't want Jesus. They cried out for Barabbas, and he was a terrorist and a murderer. He was a criminal. And that had to surprise Pilate. He didn't see that one coming. So then he had him flogged. And it's a little confusing. I was studying about it. And might be that he was whipped twice. Not exactly sure if you study the Gospels carefully, or maybe it's just the way they arranged it. It looks like that or something. But he was scourged. And if you've seen The Passion of the Christ, that's pretty much how they did it. I've seen documentaries on it. They used the flagella, the Roman flagella, cat of nine tails, and it really ripped your back to shreds. And many died before they got to the cross. They died by whipping. And so he had him whipped, scourged, and of course they pressed the crown of thorns into his head, and those Judean thorns are long like this, so they gouged his head, and there was blood running down his face and all over him, and he just looked just horrible. He was so marred, he didn't look like a human. That's what Isaiah predicted. And so then he has him brought out and he says, "Behold the man," or "Look at the man, look at this man." Like, isn't this enough? You know, hasn't he suffered enough? That was the idea. But they had no mercy at all. "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." So it was like the devil himself there and all the demons stirring up the crowds. And Pilate was scared because they told him that Jesus claimed he was a king and that he was the Son of God. And so he said, "Crucify him. Shall I crucify your king?" And they said, "We have no king but Caesar." And that's, I'll tell you, that's like the lowest blow you can imagine. These are Jews. They used to live in what's called a theocratic society where God was their king. They were the highest, the most exalted and privileged people of all time, that God would be their king. And yet, they rejected their king and said, "We want Caesar. He's our king." A pagan. They'd rather have a pagan emperor than the Jewish Messiah. What an insult to God. And so then Pilate, in his frustration and everything, has a bowl of water brought and he washes his hands and says, "I'm innocent of this man's blood." And they said, "His blood be on us and on our children." And he sees that there's this riot that's going to start and things are getting worse. He's getting nowhere, so he turns them over. He turns Jesus over to be led out and crucified. Now, we all know that story, and so, we know that and we expect that. But if you think about it, folks, there are several reasons why this didn't have to be a foregone conclusion. Things didn't have to go this way. After all, not everybody wanted it to happen this way. You might even be able to say most people didn't want it to happen this way. Pilate very definitely didn't. We can see that. He did everything he could to try to avoid it. He told the Jews repeatedly he found no fault in Jesus. He tried to pawn him off to Herod. He tried to fall back on the release a prisoner at Passover tradition. Then he tried to ramp up the punishment in stages, having Jesus flogged so that, you know, maybe they would have mercy seeing that. But everything he tried failed. His wife begged him not to do it. So he washes his hands. And, you know, he was afraid when he heard Jesus was the Son of God. Probably just a superstitious fear. He questioned him as to where he was from. He said, "Are you a king?" And, you know, then he said, "You are a king then." So he did not want Jesus to be crucified, but he was pushed to it by political pressure from the Jews, basically saying, if you don't do this, you're letting a rebel here against the Roman government, and we're going to report you to Caesar. So political pressure, political expediency is what made him do it. He knew it wasn't right. His wife told him not to do it. Boy, you better listen to your wife. She tells you something like, get in big trouble. He knew he's going to get in big trouble for that. Never mind Caesar. So I think it's pretty clear he didn't want Jesus to die. I also think, though this might seem strange to you, I also think that Judas didn't want Jesus to die either. And I say that because of the fact that he was filled with remorse when they condemned Jesus. If he wanted him to die, he wouldn't have felt that way. And he brought the coins back to the Sanhedrin. He said Jesus was innocent. He tried to reverse what he'd done. They said, no way, get out of here. And so then he ended up killing himself. I would say that, you know, if he really hated Jesus or wanted him to die, he wouldn't have acted that way. So he didn't want that. There's only two possibilities I see. Either maybe he just got offended with the Lord for a period there and decided, I'm just going to turn him in or whatever, or he just needed money, or that's one possibility. Then he changed his mind. You know, he got angry and turned him in and then changed his mind. But I kind of think it's another possibility. I think the reason he was filled with remorse is that I think that he actually turned him in so that Jesus would do something and take power and become the king. Because, you know, Judas was a zealot. He was a guerrilla. He was a super patriot, and he wanted Israel to kick the Romans out. So he was an agitator. He was a rioter, a guerrilla fighter. And he saw in Jesus the potential to be the leader they needed. You know, like Antifa doesn't have a real strong leader, and neither does Black Lives Matter. They just have it's amorphous, so they're not able to go anywhere. Somebody said that the Tea Party was like that too, that we didn't have leaders, and so therefore the thing just peters out. And it's very possible that Judas thought Jesus had what it took. He could be the leader, but he's just not doing it. He's not stepping up. And so Judas thought, I'm going to help him out. I'm going to make things happen so he'll step up. And so he betrayed him so that Jesus would say, all right, you know, that's enough. You know, he breaks the ropes off him like Samson or something, and he slays them all or whatever, and he takes over. You know, it's like Judas had this plan for Jesus' life, and he thought he knew best what Jesus should do, what God should do. And so he wanted to pressure him to be king, but Jesus just didn't respond as Judas predicted he would. And he just couldn't believe it. He's not going to do anything. He's going to let him kill him. I didn't want that. I don't want that. He never dreamed that he wouldn't do something. He's going to let him kill him. When he saw that, it just destroyed him. He tried everything he could to reverse it, but it's too late. Satan just used him like a pawn and then threw him away. He went out and hanged himself. There's no way out. What I've done is too bad. It's really sad, you know. Something we could debate about, but I really think Judas could have been forgiven if he'd have repented. All the disciples denied Jesus. He would have forgiven Judas, but he hanged himself. So Pilate didn't want Jesus to die. Judas didn't want him to die. Peter certainly didn't want him to die. They thought he was the Messiah and they were going to rule and reign with him. Peter drew his sword and he was going to fight to beat the enemies and to save Jesus for his kingdom and everything. He was going to do it that way, you know. None of the disciples wanted Jesus to die. And when he did die, they were devastated. It was the end of the world for them. You know, I believe probably most of the people around at that time didn't want Jesus to die. Many of them didn't, for sure. Maybe most of them. Because thousands of people had been touched by his ministry in some way, and they were favorably disposed toward him. Probably hundreds of people by this time considered themselves his disciples. Even some members of the Sanhedrin, like Joseph of Arimathea, Nicodemus, they were favorable toward him. And so the majority of the people didn't want to kill him. I don't believe the Romans wanted to. They're pragmatists. They could care less what beliefs you have, Messiah, whatever. They don't care as long as you're not a threat to the kingdom. Well, then who wanted Jesus to die and why did this have to happen? The answer is just amazing. It's something to ponder because it's just such an enigma. It's such a paradox because the ones that wanted Jesus to die were the evil ones and the good ones, both opposing sides, totally contradictory reasons. The side of evil wanted him to die and the side of good wanted him to die. First of all, on the side of evil, Satan and the religious leaders, they wanted him to die. Why? Well, because Satan's called the usurper. He slipped into the Garden of Eden. He wanted to get power over this earth. He tricked Adam and Eve so that he could rule here. He's the God of this age. He wants to be in charge. And God came to that Garden of Eden and he said that Satan's head was going to be crushed by one who was going to come. And Satan had been looking for him for centuries, for thousands of years. He'd been waiting for that one because he was going to snuff him out if he possibly could. That's why he had Herod kill all the babies. He was going to get him. He was after him from the very get-go. And so he wanted him dead because he thought if he killed him, that would be it, boy. That would stop God's plan. That would thwart everything. If we could just take him out, then we win and God loses. You know, Satan is a mighty spirit being. And he's been around for thousands of years. And you might say he's got to be like a genius, an evil genius. He has to have incredible faculties, mental faculties, more than any human, right? He's like a super genius of evil. And yet, this super genius couldn't figure out the mystery of God. It was too profound. The way God was going to do things, nobody could ever have figured it out. It's just amazing. The religious authorities, they were influenced by Satan, so they wanted Jesus dead for similar reasons. Think about it. He rebuked them. He said they were hypocrites. He exposed their sinful ways. Man, they hated him for that because they were filled with religious pride. They thought they were better than other people. They were more devoted to God than other people. And this guy, he dealt a terrible blow to their egos. They couldn't stand that. They hated him for it. Pretty amazing. He was a threat to them. You know, he was true, and they were hypocrites. And you got to believe they kind of knew that. He was the good shepherd. They were hirelings. He drew more followers, so they were jealous. He had a real life with God. They just had religion, so they were envious. Even Pilate knew they had turned him over to them for envy. The multitudes had even talked about Jesus being king, and the Jewish leaders said, man, if they make him king, then our whole little setup here is going to be brought down because the Romans will come and crush the nation because they won't allow another king like that. And we'll lose our place here. We got a setup, man. We are getting rich off the offerings the people bring. We got security, job security. We got position. We got, you know, elevation, pride, all that stuff. We've got it all here for us. And so they wanted to save their way of life. Their position, power, way of life. You know, Jesus said, if you want to save your life, you'll lose it. They're a perfect example of that. But you can certainly understand why the forces of evil wanted Jesus to die. But what's so strange and profound is why the force that is on the side of good wanted Jesus to die. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, they're the force of good, and they purposed for Jesus to die. His suffering and his death were predicted in the scriptures. And out of Jesus' mouth, by himself, he predicted it many, many times. When they were eating the Last Supper, he told Judas, what you do, go and do quickly. He hurried him along. He went to Gethsemane where he knew Judas realized he would be. So he set himself up for arrest there. The religious leaders, like I said earlier, they thought it'd be impossible to arrest him during Passover, but Jesus was in charge. He determined when he was going to be arrested. He refused to let his disciples stand up and defend him. Peter draws his sword, and the other disciples said, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And he said, put your sword back in the sheath. He wouldn't let them defend him. He said, do you think that I can't drink the cup that my Father gave me? I could call for 12 legions of angels right now, but it has to be this way. I have to drink the cup the Father has given me. As I said earlier, his very presence caused the mob to fall backward. He could have kept them plastered on the ground, but he let them get up. When he went before the Sanhedrin, he himself gave them what they needed to condemn him. They couldn't find any decent witnesses to condemn him. He gave it to them. He told them exactly what would get him condemned. He did it himself. In John 10, Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own will. That's why the Father loves me, because I laid down my life and I'm going to take it up again. Nobody made a victim out of Jesus. Nobody took advantage of him. He went to it voluntarily. And so the real reason that Jesus went to be crucified, folks, is not because he's a victim, not because he fell to some kind of trap of these astute people, these tricky people out there. He went there because the Father willed it. He himself agreed to it, and the Spirit enabled it. Let me tell you, otherwise it would have never happened at all. It would have never happened. And so the Gospels, truly the greatest story ever told, because think about it, at this situation here with the trial and then what we'll see of the cross, you have this amazing paradox of human beings and the devil himself and his demons doing all they can with their free wills and because of their evil intentions and evil motives and their sinful ways and all the different things you can think of. Pilate, because of, he just felt pressured, and the others because of envy and jealousy, and Judas because he wanted some kind of political resolution. Whatever it was, each one of them will be judged for what they did. Each one of them did things that were wrong. Satan inspired all this that was wrong, but yet at the same time, the beauty of it is that God is so wise, he knew millennia beforehand exactly how they were and what they would do, and he took that evil and he let it happen and he used it and turned it into something of cosmic beauty and significance that will glorify him for all time, that he absorbed evil. He took evil. He let it happen to himself. He took it freely of his own free will. He absorbed it into himself and took that condemnation and that hatred and that evil and that sin. He took it all on himself, and majestically he converted that into the way by which people can be forgiven for all that kind of garbage that we've all partaken of and participated in. So we can be forgiven and we can be reconciled to God and we can come to Him and live with Him forever. I tell you what, folks, I will glory in the cross and glory even in the arrest and trial because of this amazing story. Jesus went into the maelstrom, into the storm. He walked right into it of His own free will to purchase salvation. Who could have ever thought of such a plan? Oh, the depths of the wisdom of the depths of God's wisdom and His understanding and His grace and His mercy and His love that are expressed here in the gospel story. Amen?
Amen.
And so I just want us to close in prayer to our awesome God for what He's done for us. And then we're going to sing that song, I Love to Tell the Story, because it is so true and it is the greatest story ever told. Would you pray with me? Thanks for listening today. If you have any comments, questions, or prayer requests, I'd be happy to receive them from you. Just scroll down and you can send them from the website directly. Also, if you'd like to support this ministry, you can do it on the website by clicking the donate button or contact me to make a different arrangement. Thank you.